Greetings, film freaks. We are the Podcorn Kernels. Join us as we discuss the hard and often indigestible truths that are at the center of the fluffy and delicious world of cinema.
What's poppin', people? Welcome to the Podcorn Kernels podcast. My name is Adam, and joining me in the ear holes is Harry. Say hello, Harry.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, seis. When we started delivery of roast dinners, you don't need a gun like this, you need a gun like this.
On today's episode, we will be talking about Flea. This is a 2021 documentary film directed by Jonas Poher Rasmussen. IMDb describes the synopsis as follows. Flea tells the extraordinary true story of a man, Amin, on the verge of marriage, which compels him to reveal his hidden past for the first time. Here is an original song to support the synopsis.
Imagine having to lie to survive. Putting your faith in a stranger to drive. Leaving all you know to stay alive. The struggles of a refugee. War-torn land, no choice but to
Let's start with some facts about the film. Flea is reportedly the first film to be simultaneously eligible for consideration in the Oscar categories for animated feature, documentary feature, and international feature film.
Me like?
You like?
Yeah, I don't really understand the categories. I understand best foreign film or, say, best documentary.
Yeah, I don't think there should be animated feature.
And animated, yeah. That's crazy, yeah, when you think about it like that. But it's not a full animation. It's interspersed with
true
with real footage, archival footage, isn't it?
That is a valid argument.
Yeah. Like
maybe there has to be a certain percentage of the film that is animated for it to qualify.
Yeah, I'd say 100%
has to be animated.
Yeah,
I think that's really great accolade for such educational and harrowing piece of cinema to be
clever,
nominated
yeah.
for those at the same time.
Clever to have that much artwork going on that it can cover them different fields of accolades, didn't it? That's cool.
I could be wrong, but I don't think it won any of those awards. Out of the three, animated feature, documentary feature, and international feature film, which do you think it's most worthy of?
Was there a documentary on you said there?
Yeah, documentary feature, animated feature, or international film feature.
Documentary feature, but I'd have to know also what else it was up against at the time.
Yeah.
Like if there was The Act of Killing or what's the whale one?
Blackfish.
They were excellent. Good contenders. I'm all in for it.
Yeah. I think it speaks to the quality of the piece to even be considered in three categories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The animation is amazing.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't stay animated, does it?
It strikes a good balance between animation and real footage that it sort of relaxes you, doesn't it, with how nice it looks, the animation and stuff. It's very colourful. It's very vivid. It's good to look at.
It's got that Tintin palette.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, exactly like Tintin. And then when that real footage hits, it's like, whoa. Because you're sort of lulled into a full sense of security when it's animated, aren't you?
Yeah.
And then when you see it, it's, impactful. Bong Joon-ho, director of Parasite, listed Flea as one of his favourite films of 2021, calling it the most moving piece of cinema of the year.
Mm. He's got great taste.
Yeah.
He also loved Mad Max, Fury Road.
Well, exactly, yeah.
I think I like Mr. Joon-ho.
Yeah,
Parasite was mecca.
The man knows what he's talking about. And I'd agree with him. It certainly moved me, this film. I think the Oscar voters might have missed a trick for not pushing it forward to at least win one of those.
It's weird, isn't it? because it's revered globally and by critics and everything, but it made a huge loss with money. It didn't make much money. I think it made $800,000 and it cost $3 million to make.
Yeah.
So it's so strange when a film this so well received and so revered by the world, like Bong Joon-ho, for instance.
Mm.
If you saw this DVD on a shelf, it's at 5 stars, Bong Joon-ho, one of the best things I've ever seen. That's a seller, isn't it? That's for me. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to pick that up.
Exactly.
Yeah, strangely, it didn't win the awards. I always think they miss great opportunities, though, with who they should be putting their Oscars onto.
It feels now, even in this day and age, they still play it a bit too safe. I mean, I know it was a huge steps of inclusivity when Parasite actually won Best Picture. That's the first time, I believe, a film from world cinema has won Best Picture and not Best Foreign Picture. So they're taking steps in the right direction. But I'd argue that Flea didn't make money because it's not necessarily a film that would appeal to the masses. I think it's your cinephiles, your documentary fans, people that are looking to educate themselves, not just digest a form of entertainment. You've got to really be there for this sort of content, haven't you?
It's a great blend of two. Like you said, it's great for people, you know, historians and people that are interested in all that turmoil with the Middle East. And also for film fans, just about how it was crafted and put together.
Yes.
The animating, the editing, the clever way that he manages to put a slow fuse on the story so you stick with it, rather than straight out beheading or this.
Yeah.
Or look at this, shock, shock, shock. You slowly have to whittle down the protagonist.
That's it, yeah.
It's an alias, isn't it? His name. He couldn't reveal his real name.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's clever. So that director realising that by making it an animation, this guy could tell his story without getting reprimanded for A, being homosexual, B, being a refugee.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cool, man.
I'd argue that a film like this is actually more impactful because there's not any of, like you say, that those shocking elements you see in documentaries. Like this is a refugee story and it is shocking what he goes through.
Mm.
But there's no real, like, depiction of horrible violence, or there's no like gut wrenching.
All implied, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a horrible experience he goes through, but it isn't lessened by, like you say, that shock factor of having a scene that's just like, oh, I had to look away, I couldn't watch it. So I think it strikes that balance quite well. Mm. Director Jonas Poher Rasmussen initially conceived Flea as a radio production, then a short film, combining live action and animation, before finally settling on creating it as an animated documentary. I'm glad it's presented the way it is. Mm. I think it's more impactful with that animated element. I think it looks great.
I love animation.
Like you say, he's able to retain his
anonymity.
Anonymity, yes, because it's animated, so you don't actually see him, and he stops. He doesn't give his real name, so he's not under any threat of the authorities from Afghanistan, where he fled from, finding out where he is or who he is, because he's from a culture that still, like you said, reprimands homosexuals, really outdated with their views and stuff. So he's able to tell his story without falling victim to that. And I think it's really clever. It would be interesting to hear this as a radio production, but I don't think it would have got the audience numbers in.
No. I mean, it'd have to be marketed in a way where you could tune in, but that's kind of a self-deprecating to say this, but it's kind of a dying format, isn't it?
Yeah.
To listen to like an incredible story like that deserves a big screen.
That's it.
Or the animation or the care and attention of a really artistic director who's also friends with the subject matter.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
I think it would be asking a lot of an audience to tune in, week out, to listen to, say, it was in a podcast format. Because I'm sure he's got enough story with his experience of being a refugee and fleeing and all the trials and tribulations that came with that. But to have, I don't know, 6 to 10 hours of just listening to that, I think it's far more impactful when it hits quicker and harder, just seeing it in a neat an hour and a half animated package.
Well, otherwise it's essentially an audiobook biography, and that's what he should have just done. Mm. So doing it in this form allows his story to be condensed and made more effective because of the visuals, and throw it out there.
Yeah.
And it hits a bigger audience. I mean, for the likes of Riz Ahmed and Waldau, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Nor do I.
Jamie Lannister.
Yeah.
Nicola Costa-Valdau. But for the fact that them to be so moved by it, to, you know, put themselves in the production role to try and assist the film get recognised, get funding, etc. I think it shows that it was a powerful film.
And I... I heard that those two, the big names that were producers of this film, they didn't actually take any money from it,
yeah.
Which I respect, because I think they looked at the story, Riz Ahmed's heritage and Jamie Lannister being Danish. Yeah, they've both got like a connection to the story.
Yeah.
And I think them putting that connection front and centre rather than making any monetary gain speaks to the quality of the product.
Well, I'd rather have my name at the front of this project, because it's something to be proud of, and it's also a great way to show awareness and show the struggle of what is still happening today with refugees.
Yeah.
You know, there's a thousand kids a day that happens to, and this one story is just him. It's just one guy who was luckier than most of them. So to have your name attached to it, why would you want any money in return? No. Amazing.
It's a harrowing and humbling thought, isn't it, when you do think the amount of people that go through similar, and I hate to say it, worse plights than, I mean, in this film.
Well, look at them, the boats overturning from like Syria to, you know, Italy, the channel and stuff. It's people, for the human side is forgotten a lot of the time, because all they're looking at is they're all stealing our jobs, they're exactly. immigrants. But what they don't realize is like a four-year-old just drowned in the channel and his body just washed
up. God, it's an awful thought, isn't it?
Terrible.
I think those people, let's be honest, Brexiters who have got their panties in a twist of refugees trying to find safety, I think if they watch this film, it might change their mind a little bit.
Not all Brexiters, but the Brexiters that I knew personally, it came from more of a racial and anti-immigration standpoint that they voted Brexit because they're lower class themselves. So having myself coming from lower class, so having an affiliation with them, but when they started talking about that's why they're going to vote Conservative just to keep Brexit alive because of the immigrants, I'm like, it's not going to solve immigration.
It's almost an excuse for them to be racist, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's so funny because it's done nothing. Their thought of, you know, getting out of Europe would stop immigrants. I think 22,000 immigrants crossed the channel in 2022.
Yeah.
So it was their reasoning for the Brexit part was... It comes from a bitter place. Very funny, though, because they need to learn their own history, because the English Empire was in Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan in like 1800s. So we destabilised the Middle East. We deserve refugees and we deserve immigrants, because we need to start paying our part for the imperial colonies.
Yeah, well, I think it comes from a place of ignorance. They look at they see the figures and the stats of refugees trying to find solace, trying to come to a place where their life's not under threat, they're not in danger, and they just immediately think, oh, they're taking our jobs, they're taking our homes, all of this, which is just nonsense. If you put anyone in the position of living in a war environment, of course you're going to do all you can to get you and your family away from that conflict. Because of course you would. Yeah. You don't want to be living in an environment where you could be shot, blown up.
Why would you not want to help?
Exactly. It baffles me. So I would implore those people that are anti-refugee to watch films like...
Jeremy Kyle.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Those people.
Majority of them would be on Jeremy Kyle.
They would, yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of a very uneducated ignorance to it. But then you go to the other end of the spectrum... And it, you it's know you got the rich,
the affluent,
the affluent who also were Brexiteers and wanted to get out of Europe, but for what reasons I could never tell you. I'm not educated enough.
I don't think they know really. They've just got that sense of entitlement that it's not a good look.
Yeah.
What did you like about Flea?
Being a documentary, I'd have to narrow it down to the actual particular scenes and parts of the story that moved me. One scene that almost brought a tear to my eye because it was so effective and I wasn't expecting it. So obviously you follow the story of Amin from 4 or 5 years old, from when he's listening to Take On Me, Aha, in the streets of Kabul wearing a dress. Excellent imagery. You follow him all the way up to preteen, or like 14 years old, don't you? So he has two struggles, obviously. He's a refugee from Afghanistan during the civil war between the Afghan government and the Mujahideen.
Yeah.
CIA and the US funded them to beat the Ruskies. Sort of like a reverse Vietnam. But what I thought was beautifully moving was he's got two struggles. He's an immigrant trying to get away from war-torn zones and trying to stay together with his family, and he is the youngest, but he also is homosexual, and that's one of the hardest things in his culture. Not only has he, say, got to Russia and escaped and he's trying to improve his life, but the fact that he can't tell his family he's also homosexual, so he's got two mountains to climb.
Exactly, yeah. And one would be enough for a young mind to deal with, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Once he does sort of achieve semi-freedom, he gets sent to Denmark, doesn't he, by traffickers?
Yes.
But his oldest brother, who left years ago in Afghanistan, he's been in Sweden. He's managed to get two sisters out. The fact that his older brother keeps saying, why haven't you met a pretty girl? And they're not pretty girls in Denmark. He lashes out. I think he's gone through all of this hell, and then he wants to be honest to himself. So he says to his brother, "I don't like girls that way." And then there's this moment in the kitchen where both of his sisters turn and look at him, and they go, "You sure? Have you even been with a girl?" And his older brother just goes, "Come with me." And I just naturally thought, "Oh God, he's going to take him to a whorehouse."
You know what?
He's going to try and make him sleep with a woman, because obviously in that Afghan culture and stuff, you just think they don't believe in it. He thinks this ain't real. And, I just thought he's going to make him sleep with a woman. And it's the most touching scene ever. Yeah. But it's a gay club, and he gives him money and goes, "Go and have fun. We've always known that you don't like girls." It was beautiful.
It was lovely, wasn't it? In an hour and a half of you watching one individual's plight and him trying to navigate this crazy world when he's so young, and then growing up and having to get over all these obstacles. The biggest internal one he had was revealing his truth that he's gay.
I'd say it's the bigger one.
For him, yeah, certainly, yeah. But especially when he's part of a culture that is so unaccepting with it.
Yeah.
So, and obviously was so fearful to let his family know, you know what, I'm gay. It's who I am. And like you, that scene happens when he tells him that the brother's silent. He takes him, I'm like, oh God, he's going to make him sleep with a woman. How awful is that going to be for him? And in a film that is gut-wrenching and just horrible.
You expected the worst.
Yeah, and the fact that they're so accepting, it was a lovely moment. Yeah. That, I'll be honest, that nearly got me. I watched it twice, and both times, second time I knew it was coming, and I still found myself with a lump in my throat.
And how good did the club look? Like the music, the lights. Finally he felt accepted. The barman winked at him. He saw people being able to be themselves.
Yeah.
And obviously being Sweden or Denmark, much more forward thinking in diversity and in sexuality and gender. Eureka moment in the film is brilliant.
Imagine how freeing that must be, going through your whole life being oppressed.
Yeah.
Like you're not allowed to just go and be a refugee and escape the conflicts because of all the politics involved in that. You're scared to tell people who you really are because of the fear of backlash. Imagine that moment when your brother says, "Look, it's cool, man. I know who you are. I don't mind. I love you regardless. Whoever you are, I'll love you."
Huge relief.
And then that night must have been the most incredible night.
Yeah.
To have experienced, just to have that freedom in a life where he's had none.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. I always think back to, I saw an amazing documentary once called We Were Here, and it was about the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco. And it was so tragic how many young men whose families refused to speak to them because they were gay, but how many died alone in hospital beds because the ignorance of the family still didn't want to go and see their son, like a 23-year-old lad dying of AIDS in a hospital bed in the early days of that pandemic. And it's that's why it's so heartwarming to realize that his family accept him for it. Because imagine you grow up with your family. Obviously, sexuality comes along with most people a lot later in their life. So prior to that, they are still children, and they love their parents, they love their siblings. They grow no differently to heterosexual, bisexual.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So imagine when sexuality becomes this weird blocker between you and your family's love all of a sudden. So the fact that he had that moment with his older brother, I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's true. And it wasn't a film. It wasn't fake. It was true.
Yeah. And I think they pay respect to it by not making it like a huge over-dramatized moment.
Yeah.
It wasn't like all whistles and bells and everything, this huge moment. It was a very personal moment between him and his brother.
Mm.
And you can tell through Amin's narration of it how dearly he holds that moment,
yeah.
The way he's speaking about it.
He laughed, didn't he?
Yeah, it's lovely, man.
He goes, "Beautiful. I went to my first gay club." He goes, "I didn't go."
Yeah, it's great. You love to hear it, don't you?
Oh.
What else did you like about the film?
As we spoke about earlier, there's archival footage of the Mujahideen and Moscow. Fuck, Moscow looks grim.
yeah, it does.
And I love how he didn't mind sharing that opinion of Russians, or more specifically the traffickers, but he goes, "They're the worst people on earth."
Yeah.
And you just felt his anger.
It was raw, wasn't it?
Well, he pretty much witnessed a rape of a girl by Russian police. He got, they're so corrupt at the time, probably still are, I'd say most definitely. Yeah, so it's animated, interweaved with archival footage and animation. But at the end, there's this animated shot where he's finally decided to settle down with his other half, which he's been avoiding, ergo the title Flee. There's an unnatural inclination to keep running once you've been an immigrant.
Well, yeah, he doesn't feel like he can be comfortable being still, because his whole life has been, well, fleeing.
Yeah.
He's been moving to place to place. He doesn't feel like he can just settle.
Yeah, because I suppose it's not his home. No matter where he is, it's not It's not the Afghanistan he grew up in.
No.
Because believe it or not, there was a time where Afghanistan was, it wasn't like almost a religious, you know, caliphate. It wasn't being controlled by, you know, you have to wear a hijab, you have to, yeah, it used to be actually a very free thinking country. It used to be a kingdom as well. So, you know, women could go to school and et cetera. Then when it all changed, he can't even go back to the country he was born in. So I could never imagine that. Growing up in England, never knowing what it would be like to be pushed out of it and never get to return. Amazing that he's fleeing a lot. But yeah, I'll go back to the point. At the end, he's finally settled down with his boyfriend and made that decision to finally commit to a home, something he's never done. And it's still animated. And his boyfriend goes, oh, look, there's raspberries down here. I'll go show you them. That's really cool. There's that whole bushel of raspberries. And they step down the steps. And then it cuts to the real shot.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what the animation was. It's not a copy. It's not a copy of the real shot. They did animate originally by using footage, but it's the real shot, and that real shot implies that everything you've seen is real.
Yeah,
because they got it perfect with the animation. So that's a nice sign off.
Yeah,
it says everything you've seen here is real purely because I've just cut from animation to real.
Yeah, it's a grounding moment, and those though, like you say, scattered throughout the film is that real footage, and that makes the impact more hefty, doesn't it? And for both the more difficult moments and the more uplifting moments. So at the end, you see he's found peace. He's found a place where he feels he can call it home with the man he loves. Mm. And you're seeing what he sees, his actual home, his actual abode, his actual outlook, landscape.
And that's the lovely. First time you see real footage in the present.
Yes.
Every footage in the present is animated and all historic footage is archival.
Yeah,
and the only time you see real footage is that bit with the bush at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't see him.
No.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a lovely point. Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. Any more likes?
I think it's all encompassed in what I've said.
Yeah.
Animation, because it's a true story. I mean, how can you critique it?
It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Early doors, I had a suspicion that I didn't understand why he was lying, because he said all my family were killed by the Mujahideen, my dad, my sister, my brother. And then quite early on, it's revealed that his sisters were alive and in Sweden. I was like, hold on.
Yeah.
Why is he lying? And then patience, if you wait and hold out for it, it reveals it slowly as to why.
Yeah. His burden is not the worst case scenario, I'd say, of him actually losing his family to violent terrorist attacks. But his burden is a really hard one to tackle on your own, because he has to maintain that lie to be able to continue living in a safer place as a refugee. Because if he exposes, especially when he first went over to Denmark, that his family are all alive, they'll just ship him back because he's got people to look out for him.
If his mum's in Russia, they'll send him back. So he has to pretend they're dead.
You pair that peril of being a young person in a completely foreign land, not knowing the language on your own, all of that history of trying to flee Afghanistan and getting holed up in Russia and all the difficulties there, and then having to try and start a new life by holding that burden of a secret within, must be such a difficult thing to deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing that he came out as well as he did.
Yeah.
And you
very level headed.
And apparently he's the real person is extremely well known within the academia of the medical research that he's involved in.
Yeah.
So he's actually a very, very well known person. Mm. Maybe if you were clever, you might actually be able to find his real identity, but don't.
Yeah, don't, yeah.
I think there's a reason why he didn't want people to know him.
Exactly, yeah. Just hear his story and, yeah, just respect it.
What was weird about the McDonald's in it? So you know he's there for the grand opening of the first McDonald's in Moscow?
Yeah.
That was in the news not long ago, closing down because of the whole Russia conflict.
Really?
Yeah, closing down.
No more Big Macs for the Ruskies.
I just thought it was really weird because in the news, it's really stood out because they showed footage in the 80s of it opening.
Mm.
And that's when I first saw it, like, a few months back. And I thought, well, that looks really weird. I never knew Moscow had a McDonald's. And they showed its grand opening in the 80s, just after the Berlin Wall, I think. And then and then it closing down because of the current conflict with Ukraine. And then it appeared in the film and they captured it perfectly.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's weird.
It's madness that
he saw it.
Yeah, McDonald's opening and closing is such a big story elsewhere. Where over here, oh, there's another McDonald's. Is there? Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, it was symbolic of the Russians moving past the Soviet Union and trying to make ties with the US rather than have that whole Cold War, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that McDonald's standing in Moscow is really symbolic.
Yeah.
So it closing is another. It's another message of returning back to that Iron Curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I liked most about the film was just how profoundly moving it was like your sentiments exactly. It's Flea is a harrowing insight into the plight of a refugee. And I found it to be a strong documentary feature film that is raw, powerful, but it's also like moving and brave as well. I admire Amin and the team for delivering a film that doesn't go the way you think it would. Now, I don't know if I've been conditioned to when you watch a documentary of this caliber to think, oh God, it's going to be just a horrible, horrible story. And don't get me wrong, there's parts of his life and his experience that are awful. Like you said, I can't comprehend the physical and emotional turmoil that man and his family have been through. I will never understand it. But at the start, when you hear that, when he says that he's lost all his family, I was expecting the worst. And I didn't think for one second that it would turn out that his family were all okay.
Apart from dad.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sort of a given, that his dad got taken fairly early doors in the conflict, and you expected the worst.
The Afghan government thought he was a communist.
Yeah.
So he was definitely killed, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he disappeared, but they killed him.
I think it's safe to say, yeah. Mm. But I think, as I say, you see documentaries like this, and you, after 10, 20 minutes, you're like, you sort of brace yourself for the worst. But oddly, even though the worst doesn't happen in terms that his family is still alive, it still hits hard because he's had to pretend they're not, which would still be a lot to deal with, right?
Well, yeah, because I think when he first got to Denmark and say he'd made his freedom to quite a democratic, westernised country, he had to be alone still for 2-3 years. He couldn't contact, really. He couldn't talk to anyone because he had to hide the fact that he does have family.
Yeah.
So that would have been, can't even imagine what he got up to or like how he fed himself or did anything. I suppose he got a bit of help from the state, but how lonely.
God, yeah.
Amazing. But then again, what you've been through in the cargo hold of a ship in the bloody Baltic Sea, Christ, can you imagine how terrifying that is?
Mm.
Like in a storm, icy cold water, your mum's there, you're just thinking, Christ, what's going to happen?
I feel like the story, the film, it's a testament to Amin's character to be able, like you said, to be able to come out at the end of this and still be a respectable member of society, intelligent, being able to accept love, being able to give love, be a well-rounded person after all of this. Like, that takes some deep inner strength, man, like full respect.
How did he get ahead in life in terms of education with such a hiatus of like education and normality?
Well, in the film itself, I guess he says there was this sense of almost burden that he had to pay back what his family done for him.
Yeah.
Because obviously, they had to save money to be able to flee at first Afghanistan, then Russia.
That's why he puts relationships on the back burner.
Exactly, yeah. He's fully committed to paying family back by his success, by being an upstanding civilian, by being someone that they're proud of, and they must be.
Yeah, he said he owes his siblings the world, doesn't he?
Yeah.
That's sad, man.
It is.
What a heart.
Mm. My second like is just how important I consider documentaries and films like this to be. I consider this more educational than entertaining, and the film shows us the importance of hearing the insights from all perspectives of war. It made me realise how lucky I have been and how lucky I am to live the life that I have. Now, all too often, refugees, particularly in English media, they can be villainised. There's more people coming over, like we mentioned earlier, the Brexiters, the ignorant racists that are up in arms about it. But you listen to their stories, and like you said, this man's story is one of millions that have gone through similar or worse experiences. Like, it's important that these voices are heard.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that, and I think more people should open up their mind and absorb it.
The power of documentaries. Love it.
Certainly.
The two companion pieces I absolutely adore. I think you've seen one of them, Act of Killing and The Look of Silence, about the Indonesian genocide with communism. That's really brave, because one of the people who actually suffered at the hands of the genocide puts himself on camera, changes his name, but he does put himself on camera. And that was really powerful. And Flea's up there with these, I think, most definitely. Especially because there's that storyline running right alongside it with the coming out of the closet.
Yeah.
So that's like two huge, huge things that he's dealing with. I mean, what else could you have put in there to make it even harder for him?
Oh, God knows.
Mad.
It's humbling. Mad. Very humbling, isn't it? My final like is again, it mirrors yours, and the animation itself. It's beautifully strong imagery, and it's a really interesting way to present Flea. it manages to both soften the blow and heighten the peril with a really striking animation style that helps Amin tell a really difficult story. I think it's a fascinating story. It's an educating story. It's an eye-opening story. But it would, I would argue, if it was just floating head type documentary where people are talking to the camera, maybe he's a silhouette so he doesn't reveal his identity, it would have, I don't know, it wouldn't have that, I would, flourish might be the word of a wrong word, but the fact it's animated and it looks so nice, it makes the piece feel more like a film than a documentary. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, you could have the most highly realistic voice acting in it, almost like real life mockumentaries, couldn't you?
Yeah.
You throw an animation on it, it is a film. But because it's real people talking in real moment, the animation gives it the film effect. If you were just watching someone talk and there was recreations, then it's that belongs on telly, doesn't it? It's a documentary on at 5 PM.
Yes.
So having the animation aspect allows it to be a film. I think I agree with you in that sense.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Is there anything you didn't like about Flea?
Maybe I might have wanted to have seen more archival footage of the terror they were fleeing with the Mujahideen and the constant changing of governments and the Russian involvement, because it was, obviously it was terrible, but I think they managed to get out quite quickly before it got really bad. Because the Mujahideen ended up being Al-Qaeda in the end. Well, Al-Qaeda are the terrorist group, but ended up being the Taliban, you know, so what he left behind only ever got worse.
Yeah.
You know, public beheadings in football stadiums and stuff. Jesus. Like just out of stoning of women. So maybe to just show what he left behind a bit more. So yeah. I might have personally wanted a bit more shock. But then again, that wasn't his story.
Yeah, that's a good point to round that off with, isn't it? Because it is a personal story rather than the bigger picture. Mm. But I think it would have been interesting to have gained more context at the bigger scale of things. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, because you didn't really see much of the tyranny in his homeland. You saw it a lot more in Russia, but then again, being older, he took that one on a bit more, didn't he?
Mm.
So, God, I think that was the worst part for me, was that it was watching him, their struggle in Russia. I just thought, it's a bleak place anyway.
Mm.
And imagine having, it's not your home and you're being persecuted every single day and the police are so bloody bent.
Mm.
Imagine being young, escaping all of that and just still having people using you, not helping you, not cuddling you. You know, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's hard to find a dislike for it. But maybe the pacing in bits, like, well, just as he's about to start revealing stuff, he then steps back and goes, oh, I'm not ready.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know, when someone goes, oh, I need to tell you something, but I can't yet.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, you've drawn me in now. I'm interested. Tell me more. Yeah, yeah.
Hit me.
I think that's a decision in the filmmaking process to just show you how difficult he found it all and to relate to that. But yeah, certainly it draws you in and then he's almost reluctant because he's been holding that secret and that burden in for so long. It must have been tough to share it, right? Mm. Yeah, I'll go on to my dislikes. Like you, I struggle to find anything. It's hard to decipher a documentary like this and think, oh, I didn't like this, because you're not enjoying this. You're like I said, you're educating yourself, you're broadening your horizons, you're gaining a better understanding. So to nitpick seems a little bit distasteful. But I guess an element I did dislike, I'd say, it is a difficult watch. And whilst I applaud the bravery and efforts of everyone involved with Flea, it is at its core a difficult to digest documentary. The film touches on subjects like war, racism, homophobia, human trafficking, and it's a continuously harrowing insight into one refugee's tumultuous life.
Mm.
And I'd say if you're particularly sensitive, if you don't enjoy watching tough documentaries, maybe this isn't something for you. If you'd prefer to consume content that's whimsical and lighthearted and fun, then I would suggest you steer clear of Flea. But equally, I think it's important to
Well, it's told to like watch. A story, isn't it? Through the animation. So it's not as harrowing, I suppose, as something with the real footage of, you know, war crimes, etc.
Mm.
You can keep your eyes on the screen for the whole film. You never have to look away. And on a couple of occasions, you think you're going to have to look away. I thought when they were, in their first attempt to escape, they were carrying an older woman in the woods, wouldn't they, in the cold? And, and the Russian guys that's just put a bullet in her head.
I thought that was going to happen.
Yeah, I thought they were going to kill the old woman. And as an animation, you'd know that that was real. So you can keep your eyes on the film the whole time, but it's what plays on your mind after and during.
Yes, like, certainly.
You'll think of your own mum in this. You'll think of your own brothers and sisters, and you'll put yourself in his shoes, and that's the harder one to swallow.
Definitely. Yeah, I totally agree. And the other thing I struggled with, again, it's not necessarily a dislike, but for the purpose of the podcast, it was just the harrowing film footage. Flea is clever at disarming the audience with the visually stunning animation, but throughout the film, clips of real wartime footage are weaved into it, and the impact of these true recordings, it feels greater when you don't expect it. And I found it added to the difficulty of the viewing. It's cleverly made, but difficult to digest.
You do see a couple of dead bodies, don't you?
Yeah. There's one in particular that sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. Is someone falling down a slope. A pavement slope, and he's been shot.
Yeah.
And you see him sort of slide down, and then almost like the foot of the slope accepting it, like covered in blood. And it was just the beautiful animation and the more joyous moments of the film sort of distracts you. And then when those parts come in, it hits different, and you're like, oh, fuck.
You almost can't look away.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got some questions. I think Flea is an important film. Do you think it should be shown in schools as an educational tool, or does the narrow-mindedness of some parents mean it would cause too much controversy?
Well, if the parents watched it too, I'd find it hard. They'd be one of the worst people on earth if they watched that and didn't feel for the people, the struggle that these guys are going through.
But that, unfortunately, those people that, because of their prejudice against refugee and particularly that part of the world, wouldn't even watch it. And I could see if there are parents out there, if they heard their child was be showing this, I'm not talking young children, I'm talking in sick form and stuff like that, watching films like this to better educate, to broaden those horizons. I think there are parents out there that would be in uproar, which is a damn shame.
I've always used this to disarm ignorance. It could be in a pub, it could be a distant relative, and they've got ignorant views. I always disarm them of this. So I ask them, who do you love the most? Like, who's dearest to you? I'll ask you now, who's dearest to you? Partner, mum, doesn't matter, does it? They're all dear to you, right? You're with them on a platform train station. Now, a kid accidentally on his bike knocks your loved one onto the tracks, and a train's coming, yeah? And you're standing there. You can't get down to her, but then an African man jumps down, a Ukrainian man jumps down, or an Iranian man jumps down, and they save that person's life and pull them up onto the track, and then they get hit by the train. Are you telling me after that, you're still going to walk away with your ignorance about whatever nationality of that guy that jumped down, saved your mum's life, saved your wife's life, then got hit by a train and died? Are you still going to walk away and teach your kids to be a racist fucker?
Well, you would hope not. And I don't understand the mentality of racists or bigots or homophobes. I don't understand that mentality that they're so full of hate that they disregard these groups of people. But I would struggle to believe that any racist or any bigot in that situation, surely not. They wouldn't be like,
no way.
Can you put my mum back on the track, please? I don't agree with your skin colour. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
That's how quickly, and that is one of the best questions you could ever ask someone that's ignorant. And you know what? The ones that would say, no, I wouldn't change my opinion about them, they're lying.
They deserve to be on the track.
And they think they're putting on this facade of being hard and being et cetera, et cetera. Arseholes.
Yeah. Every time I watch a documentary, it inspires me to watch more. What is your favourite documentary and why?
It used to be Grizzly Man because it's mad. The Werner Herzog documentary, because it was such an odd documentary. Blackfish is up there. Actor Killing, Look of Silence. It's a hard one. Maybe The Thin Blue Line's excellent, about wrongful imprisonment. West of Memphis, that's excellent.
Because I think it's safe to say your knowledge of documentaries are far more superior to mine.
Mm.
And the documentaries I have seen tend to be ones that you recommend.
Sugar Man's probably my favourite.
What's that one about?
That's about Chico Rodriguez. He was he was the Elvis equivalent in South Africa during apartheid, but he was this poor, almost homeless musician in Detroit in the freezing cold, living alone. Everyone thought he was dead in South Africa. And he, at the time, he was like the flag of standing up against apartheid. So he had no idea how successful he was. He's bigger than Elvis in South Africa, but living in a slum in Detroit.
Yeah.
And someone from South Africa, a documentary maker, went looking for him because he wanted to find out how he died. There was even rumors that he set fire to himself on stage.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. And anyway, he sends out like this message about Shikto. Did anyone know where he lived or anything? And Shikto's real daughter messaged him, went, "My dad's not dead, he's alive." So they go out to find him, and then they bring him back to South Africa, and he puts on a gig to, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people. That's singing amazing. His songs,
yeah.
Which he never even knew. They knew. Wow. Yeah, so Sugar Man's probably my favourite.
See, I know you've spoken to me about that one before, and I do want to check that one out. So that would be the one one that you would offer as a suggestion to others that are looking to expand on their documentaries.
Because it's that's probably one of the most incredible underdog stories you could ever watch, and it doesn't hurt at all that he's one of the best songwriters probably ever.
Really?
Yeah, he was around the time of Bob Dylan, and he did Bob Dylan better than Bob Dylan.
Okay.
He amazing song, very heartbreaking, but beautiful film.
Yeah, I'll be sure to check that one out. Final question. Watching Flea really hit home that behind every refugee is a story of struggle and desperation. Would you like to see more documentary films about the extraordinary journeys of ordinary people?
Always, yeah.
Yeah.
I think when it's real, I think any film that starts with "these are based on true events" or "this is a true story," it only adds and help support that film because you're invested in the true story, aren't you? It's like, God, did that actually happen? You find yourself looking, did that actually happen?
Yeah.
Which I think is very important to tell true stories.
Yeah, me too, man, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, what would you rate Flea out of 10?
I'd give it, and I'm basing this on other documentaries, which I found more powerful, more effective. I'm going to say 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only based on where I've felt the person revealing their own identity at the risk of their own skin. It was ballsy. I'm not discrediting him for not doing it because he had other reasons. But I think, Look of Silence, certainly for one, the shock factor of it and the risks that the guy's taking in it are shocking because he goes back to where it happened and confronts the people that did it. Yeah. So he's still a target. So 8 based on other documentaries.
Yeah. I think you have to rate a film like Flea and documentaries differently to how you would rate an actual feature length film, a blockbuster or an indie film. It needs to be a different sort of scale of rating because it is a true story.
And it's cool, yeah.
And you're not watching it to be entertained like you'd watch a huge blockbuster or to be sort of shocked by stories that haven't actually happened in the branch of shock cinema or indie films or quirky cinema, all of that. So you have to rate it differently. And I'd go with your score as well. I'd give it an 8 out of 10 for all of those reasons.
Ba-boom!
That gives Flea a total score of 16 out of 20.
So yeah.
You should definitely check it out. If you value education over entertainment when it comes to documentaries, or if you like to be humbled by how difficult life as a refugee can be, then Flea could be a film for you. Consider watching this one if you enjoyed Waltz with Bashir, Persopolis, and I Lost My Body. Should we play a game?
Sí, señor.
The game in question is What the Plot, where the rules are simple and the results quite the opposite. Harry will conceive an original idea from his big and beautiful brain and give birth to a plot. It is then down to me to nurture this thought by providing a film title, genre, cast, and anything else I can think of to raise this brainchild into a fully functioning film concept. Over to you, Harry.
I had to write a bit down for this one because you might be able to tell that I'm a bit heavy-breathed today.
Okay.
Because I'm building up a nice cold.
Oh, okay.
So I wrote a little down.
That's good.
Okay.
Preparation is key.
Not always.
Okay.
I do like improv. I think it can weave gold.
Yep.
Occasionally.
Yep. Hit me.
Unless it involves hats or missing legs.
Yes.
We follow the story of John Ridgeback, a loner throughout his adult life. Although warm and kind and sharing, he shares none of his sadistic peculiarities that his dad did.
I'm intrigued now. What was his dad?
Well, you'll find out.
Okay.
He struggles to maintain friendships or romances because he can't talk about his past. So through fear of being rejected or misjudged, So he can't reveal anything, hence why nothing really works out for him. But through flashback, we're going to see the strange experiences in his childhood, like his father picking up women in the street, finding blood inside his dad's van. And eventually it's revealed that his dad was the notorious red light ripper, serial killer who murdered 30 prostitutes. And now he's obviously dead or in prison, he's gone. But this kid's growing up knowing that that was his dad, and he's got to hide his name, he's got to hide his identity, essentially. You could even liken it to the real Gary Ridgway. John Ridgeback. I didn't even plan that. So John Ridgeback's the character's name, right? So Gary Ridgway was the Green River killer.
Okay.
Killed like 50 prostitutes.
Right.
And he had a son, actually. So maybe I have been watching too many documentaries. Yeah. So how do you move on with your life? How do you ditch that part of your life knowing that your dad was a notorious serial killer? And you were even in the van, like when he picked the woman up, and he'd say, "Oh, go and play with your bike." And in that time, he'd murder someone, and you come back to the van and stuff. Like, he grew up with all of these weird memories. So in the film, we see, you know, it starts with the loner, the guy in his adult life, having a very difficult time socializing, talking with people, building romances. Yeah. But then through flashback, you see why. And so I suppose it would culminate into the end of first time trying to tell someone he really cares about what actually happened and who his dad was. Because
okay.
Who would stick around? If you told someone your dad was the red light ripper, they're never going to look at you and think, "God, he's fine, he's normal." They're going to think he could do it as well. Look, I go on Wikipedia. Oh my God, his dad did this, he did that.
So has the son managed to attain anonymity so that it's not common knowledge that his dad is the red light ripper?
Well, he's a minor, so...
When it was found out he was a minor, but now he's an adult...
Well, yeah, so they would have moved them probably and changed their name. Even if they didn't, he would have done it himself. You can legally change your name past a certain age, can't you?
Yeah.
You every day you're living a lie. Because say it happened to him when he was 9, but now he's 30 and he's in a bar and a girl shows him attention. He dates her for a few, and then she goes, "I want to meet your family." And goes, "Oh, they died." She goes, "Oh, what'd your dad die of?" Like, how much will the lies just start rolling off his tongue? And if he tells her the truth, she's going to be like, "Oh, no chance."
I guess similarly to Amin in Flea, he's holding this burden within himself. And I guess that, like, if throughout his life he's trying to come to terms with this, he's had to keep people at an arm's length. Because, of course, when you meet someone, through the evolution of the relationship, you talk about the past, the family and all of that stuff, it'd be a very, very difficult thing to open up about.
Well, this is someone else's shame, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's even stranger because it's not actually his actions, but he's suffering the consequences of his dad's actions.
Yeah.
It's like being Hitler's last surviving relative, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm thinking... as part of this story, to try and find some closure, maybe he's the red light ripper is still alive. Maybe to try and find some closure, he goes to visit his dad. He hasn't visited him all the time he's been in prison, but because he's a warm, good guy at his core, the son, and to be able to move forward and allow love in, he's got to sort of visit that part of his life.
Who could?
It'd be very difficult, but I would see this as being a son trying to come to terms with the crimes of his father by sort of tackling it head on and dealing with that closure. And I wouldn't ever, within the film, I'd never see it as him gaining closure, never getting close to his dad. I would have his dad as this abhorrent, this monster.
Liar,
still now.
Manipulator.
Just, he still sees himself as the victim. He's really aggressive, really nasty to his son. And the film sees the son going to see the dad on numerous occasions to try to get the bottom of it, better understanding so he can move forward with his life. So that's a really interesting story. In summary, it's the story of John Ridgeback. He's a loner, but a warm individual, good soul, well-intentioned, but he struggles with relationships because of his murky past. And his past reveals that his dad is the notorious red light ripper who 30 years ago picked up women and savagely killed them.
Yeah.
Serial killer who's been caught. And the story revolves around John Ridgeback trying to get over his past, better understand it and try to move on with his life.
Yeah.
So directing this is a dramatic film, but I think that you'd need a taut and tense environment that I think you could really drive up the anxiety. So when he goes back to see his dad, his dad could be so cold that you as the audience have got to feel that that horrible, anxious rush of his dad still being a monster. So I would have the Safdie brothers directing, who are making their name in this really niche world of anxiety-induced filmmaking. You look at Good Time and Uncut Gems, that gets the heart beating. So I would put a son being exposed to his dad and the menace of his dad and having to deal with that could really be each meeting with him is more anxious, anxiety inducing than the last. And playing John Ridgeback, the son, I'd go Evan Peters, who was recently Jeffrey Dahmer in Dahmer.
Yes.
Just to flip it.
Yeah.
Because after playing such an iconic killer.
Just give him dark hair and he'll be fine.
Change him up a bit.
He's a great actor. Look,
so I think it'd be interesting for him to distance himself from being the villain to being almost the victim. And I think he's a very talented younger actor who's going to have big things awaiting. He's going to be great.
The flashback actor? The younger Ridgeback?
Oh, I'd be almost tempted to just it be an up-and-coming someone that we don't know.
Yes.
Just so it's not taking anything away from the actual story.
Yes.
And also because I can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Of course.
That's the main reason. So, yeah, I'd have Evan Peters as John Ridgeback. And then his dad, I'd have John Goodman.
Oh, the Gooders.
Yeah.
Imagine him.
Bigger, larger than life.
And
he's found a new lease of life where he's getting more substantial roles. I could see him being
he could play crazy.
Yeah. And he's still got that hold over his son of being this intimidating presence, and to have that, there's no good him being like a whittled, frail figure. John Goodman's big, isn't he?
Yeah, he's
tall,
big dude.
He's a large dude, and he's got that big booming voice, so the son could still be threatened by him, and I think he could be a real menace. And the interactions between father and son in the prison cell could be really interesting.
I could see them two being father and son in an intense prison scene.
Yeah. So Safdie brothers at the helm, Evan Peters as the son, John Ridgeback, and John Goodman as the red light ripper. And I'd call the film Red Light, Green Light.
Breaking news. The notorious red light killer has been convicted for the brutal murders of 30 women in the Deep Bay area. The judge handed down a sentence of life imprisonment with no chance of parole.
What the fuck are you doing here?
I want closure, Dad. I haven't been able to start my life because of what you've done.
You haven't come to see me in 20 years. You left your poor dad to rot in prison, and now what? Want to hear about what Daddy did?
I need to understand. I can't form a relationship because I can't get over my past. I need to move on, Dad.
That's bullshit. You got the bug, haven't you, boy? You want to be like your dad, huh? You get hard at the thought of killing too, son?
What? No. My therapist says I need to confront my past so I can start my future. She says I have to speak to you.
She? What does she look like?
The new film from the Safdie brothers, starring Evan Peters and John Goodman. Red Light, Green Light. Coming soon.